So I've been in touch with a lot of sort of gaming lifestyle nourishment companies. Your G Fuel, Gamer Grub is still around.
Got
and they
to.
Have pretty and when they actually reached out to me and I was like, hell yeah, we're finally getting that Gamer Grub money here on the Besties, but that wasn't it. They need some help with this messaging project that they're working on with Pfizer, who is pretty close to getting this vaccine locked down. They're worried about sort of the acceptance rate of the vaccine among gamers because we're so freaking savvy, aren't we? We always got our head on a swivel trying not to get ripped off by microtransactions or another David Cage game. So they're like trying to, they're coming at us with like a sort of gamer vaccine idea, and they want to, they're floating like, hey gamers, here's a healing potion. They're really wild about the idea of like, here's a disease, cure disease scroll. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like and a Phoenix Down, basically.
Like a Phoenix, well, but it's not, it's more of like a soft or a remedy.
Oh, sure.
And they're looking at it like, how can you up your stats with this rad vaccine? And maybe Tony Hawk is there and he does a kickflip as he's injecting himself with the potion.
So just to confirm,
yes,
Pfizer,
yes,
is collaborating with Gamer Fuel,
Gamer Grub,
and then Gamer Grub, and then they are they're subcontracting you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're subcontracting.
And you're subcontracting us.
We're all part of. Sure, if you want to think about it that way, I like that because I get a little bit more of the cut.
Okay.
And it's lucrative, boys. We're talking about like $1.5 billion.
Okay. Now I'm interested.
Sure.
So what do we need to do?
Just think of the best sort of way that we can make this appealing to gamers, this incredible vaccine that's coming.
I think it's easy, right? You just make it drinkable form. You put it in one of those gamer fuels. That stuff tastes so bad. Nobody's going to notice if they just slurped up a good old vaccine.
That's probably a good point,
What would you put on the can, though, to really convince people to sell?
I think Chris is suggesting you put nothing unusual on the can.
Or like not a vaccine.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best console of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best console of the decade.
What? No. My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best console of the podcast.
My name is Rose Frosick, and I told you fuckers about this controller and how cool it was, and you were all rolling your eyes.
Wow.
No one cared.
Wowie wawa.
You understand.
A lot of assumptions here that everybody loves this controller.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
This is the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It is a Game of the Year show that goes all year long, a King of the Hill, but for video games, a video game book club. It is all things to all people who care about electronic entertainment. This week, we are talking about the PlayStation 5 console, a new one from Sony. They're back, and they are... bringing along this new white box, and we're going to tell you all about it. Chris, normally I would have you just tell people what the PlayStation 5 is, but that's what we're going to do, I think, at length. So let's just take a break, and then we'll get to talking. No spoilers, by the way.
For the PlayStation?
Spoiler free.
So it's got the triangle button still.
We won't tell you the specific code used to unlock the hatch on the back, which has a map. Well, against all odds, Amazon delivered my PlayStation 5 to my home. It didn't look good there for a little while, but then it did come on launch day.
I got it one day late, so I sent Jeff a real nasty email.
I wanted to ask, because Justin described this as a box in the intro, and can we I don't think it's a box.
No, it's sort of an ovaloid sort of tesseract situation.
It's like a tower.
It's a monster. We can make this part of the segment pretty quick. It looks like dog shit, and I don't like the way that it looks. It looks completely outrageous.
You know, no, what I think it looks like is when I wear a shirt that is two sizes too small, thinking it will somehow make me look slimmer, that's what happened here. There was they had a large, Black Box. There was a video game console, and I'm like, you know, if we put these like Pringle white chips on the sides, that'll make it look smaller. And then they made it, and they're like, Craig, you're fired.
I'll show you guys later. It looks, without the white wings on it, it literally looks exactly like my modem that came from my my ISP. Like, it's like this black tower with like a rounded top. It's literally indistinguishable from the PlayStation 5, but only it's got a sort of protective barrier around it.
I kind of like it.
Says the man wearing the gamer glasses.
I do. I kind of like it. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an aesthetic expert or anything, but I like how novel it looks. It feels new. And I feel like in this specific generation where it's evolutionary more than revolutionary, I feel like this is one area where they could really make it feel new and dynamic. And I like that. I mean, it feels kind of futuristic and cool. It's not practical, but like once I put it into my entertainment system, it
doesn't matter anymore.
It's like a cool new box. It doesn't matter. I tell you one thing, as long as we're talking about boxes. Oh, the heat on this thing is not a joke. It's quiet. It's really quiet. It doesn't make noise. But like I walked past its cubby and it felt like I had just walked past like the register for a heating vent. It was like definitely like blowing some serious.
You got like a mini spa going on in there.
Yeah.
I mean, is your cubby, is it like open in the front? And what's the ventilation in the cubby like? Because now I'm worried about your cubby.
Mm-hmm. It's a big cubby. I don't want to. I mean, I made it, of course. It's perfect for what it needs to be.
That's fine.
And if it needs to be bigger, you know what I'll do, Griffin?
What?
I'll change it with my hands and tools.
That's cool. That's so cool.
Can you change my PlayStation 5? Is that an option?
Yeah, can you?
No, once electricity's into it, I'm out. Or metal or plastic or glass.
Justin mentioned evolutionary, not revolutionary. And I feel like we talked about this, I feel like, with the Xbox a bit. I definitely think that's the case for PlayStation 5. For me, the main, and I'm sure maybe we'll all sort of voice our gut instinct.
Griffin and I, by the way, I just want to set this table real quick. Do not have Xboxes.
Yeah.
We just have PlayStation 5. So no point of comparison there.
I didn't get any like physical games with it. So I got it in a day late. Again, I sent Jeff a real stink eye for that. And within, I don't know, a half hour, it was going. I downloaded Demon's Souls first. And miraculously, it was done in like 14 minutes, 15 minutes, which compared to the download speeds on PlayStation 4 is pretty fucking good. And then I was just like playing Demon's Souls within the hour. I didn't do the save transfer stuff from the PS4 because I don't necessarily. I didn't really care about that part.
It told me I had just breezed through setup.
Yeah.
And then because it's very quick.
Yeah.
And then it's like, do you want to transfer everything from your PlayStation 4? And I was like, well, it's over there in a corner. You want me to plug it back in, don't you? Like, yeah. Plug it back in and hook it up to a different TV nearby, I guess. I don't know. And then I went ahead and did that. I hooked up to a different input, switched over, and it was like, okay, well, this will just take 14 hours. And then, oh, you can't use the new box. So do you? I'm like, I'll never play those games again. I've done lying to myself.
I'll do
and
that
you
at
can
some
download
point.
All of it. Like, it's all
yeah,
online.
That's the other thing.
As someone who made the mistake of doing that, I did that connection, and it's like, okay, what do you want to transfer over? I'm like, oh, you know, just a few of my favorite games. It's like, cool. So that's going to use up half of the entire hard drive.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Well, how about just a few? And it's like, cool. It's going to take a few hours. Can you come back in a little bit? I'm like, great. I do that. I come back and only one of the games transferred over.
Oh, no.
That's not
so
good.
So it's like, I waste all the time. I was like, I could have been playing fun things right now. But no. But
that is the decision I would endorse if you do that. Because honestly, like, I can't think of too many. I can't think of that much save data on my PS4 that I really care about bringing
over.
Well,
and also, if you have PlayStation Plus, it's just in the cloud. You just download it off the cloud.
Yeah, so that part doesn't really matter as much to me. But like it compared to previous generations and the sort of transition between those, we're going to talk about Demon's Souls is by far the game I've spent the most time talking about, and I think we're going to dedicate a whole episode to that next week. But like I was playing Demon's Souls and being sort of wowed by the big cool stuff with the PlayStation 5 within like 40, 45 minutes of like starting to unbox it, which for me is like pretty remarkable. Like, I can't remember a level of accessibility from, like, the jump since, like, the Wii came out. So that is such a pain point for so many pieces of new hardware. And for the PS5, it is, like, wicked not.
So, okay, I want to talk about specifically Astros, and I mentioned it at the top, but let's talk about the controller, because it sounded like there was some dissension in the ranks regarding the controller. I've spoken at length about how I feel about both Astros Playroom and the controller, but I'm curious what your guys' vibe was.
Astros Playroom, I don't know that we've painted a particularly clear picture of, like, what it is, because I thought it was like a game. I did not know it was like a pack-in.
It is a game.
It's a game, but it's like a pack-in with the PlayStation 5 that is essentially like a PlayStation Museum platformer that, like, is all a tech demo for what the controller can do.
Yeah, but I want to make it clear to people, like, I think, so when the PlayStation 4 launched, they had a thing called the Playroom, which was like four mini games where you, like, there's a target shooter and there's a blah blah blah. It wasn't a game. It was just like a collection of shitty mini games, basically. This, it feels like a very short, but it feels like a Nintendo platformer to me.
Well, it feels like Rescue Bot, the PSVR
game. Which no one played because it was a PSVR game. But
it was a really good game, but yeah, fair point.
I don't think the game itself is great. Like, I would definitely not compare it to Nintendo level quality, but as a tour of, like, Sony history, it's awesome.
It's fucking radical.
It's really nice to see, actually, Sony sort of, you know, Nintendo has fetishized its history for so long that you forget that PlayStation and Sony have not done as much of that. And to see their sort of lineage at this point treated with that a little bit more reverence like that was really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, to see there are collectibles that are like old Sony controllers and stuff that you get and that are like perfectly recreated in the game to look at. And that was cool to see them sort of honoring that legacy in a way that they have not necessarily always been great about.
Yeah, I think my brain has also been broken by Nintendo's fetishization of its history that, like, first party is king. And at first, when I was playing Astros, there are a number of games that are referenced that are not Sony-owned games.
Yeah.
A lot of Capcom stuff. And I was like, oh, that just shows, like, they just don't have as much iconic stuff as Nintendo. And then I, like, caught myself. I'm like, that is a stupid way of looking at video game history. Like, the PlayStation played these games. That my memories are associated with playing them on PlayStation.
Well, and most of them that they show, games like, Metal Gear.
Resident Evil, Final Fantasy VII,
for example, are games that originally came out, were exclusive to PlayStation platforms. Devil May Cry is another example that's in there.
I think Tomb Raider's in there. Resident Evil.
I think that's the determining why they're included, the third-party stuff, is because they were primarily PlayStation games first, and then later came to other platforms.
But it is also a showcase for the controller, which we should get into, because I get the sense that Chris is not crazy about that element of it.
No, I like the controller in general, and I think in the context of Astro's Playroom, it's incredible. This is the stupidest little detail. There's all these fancy things the controller can do with the triggers and yada, yada, yada. But there's one moment in Astro's Playroom where you spin up a giant flower and it sprouts CD or DVD discs, and you jump on those discs, and there's this lightest quick tap on the very front of your controller that feels like flicking a disc.
Yeah.
And I just did that for like a minute just because I could not believe how much it felt like in my head what that very specific thing is supposed to feel like. That is incredible.
Yeah.
If they do that in more games, like, actually it's not even the haptic triggers. It's all the weird rumble stuff that the controller
does.
That's the stuff that I like.
When you run on a hard surface, you get the footsteps that are so light. And I was running around for like an hour not noticing it. And an hour in, I realized, like, oh my God, like, when you run around on steel or glass and you, like, hear the echo of your footsteps on it, like, you feel little pitter-patter in the controller. Yeah. And the fact that you don't even notice it, it speaks to the kind of, like, promise of haptic feedback of being, like, this thing that accentuates the experience without you realizing it.
And I never liked the sound coming out of the controller on PS4.
PS4.
I thought that was silly. Here, combined with the controller, it all works finally.
I turn that shit off. That
needs to happen.
I think it enhances it. I think it's worth using it when it doesn't bother you or the people sitting around you, because I think it ties in with what Griffin, what you were just saying about the haptics. So when you can hear the tip taps along with feeling them in your hand. I mean, the example that I think of, there's a level where you're in the rain and Astro sprouts an umbrella hat and the rain is like falling on the umbrella hat and you can feel all the raindrops in your hand, like across your entire hand, and hear them in the controller. Like, that illusion is so consistent and like convincing that you really, like, it's a fucking platformer. This is not what I would call an immersive game, but you feel placed in this world in ways that I've like never felt in a Mario game, which I absolutely love Mario games, but I've never felt that level of immersion in a Mario game because you didn't have that direct connection.
Okay, but the triggers though.
This is where I separate from Fresh a bit. I mostly found the triggers annoying. And even in Astros, the like loading the spring thing, one, the loading a spring and then shooting a character to move around, not fun at all. Pretty annoying. And then having it like resist me doing that is like, hey, I get it. I don't want to be here either. Like, we can both agree to part ways. And I it's really hard for me to imagine, especially as more games go online and are more competitive, people keeping that turned on. That said, do I think it would be cool to have that in Last of Us? For things that aren't shooting, yes. But anything where I need like immediate responsiveness, I am skeptical.
I will say, to this exact point, on Spider-Man, when you swing, there's differing tension depending on where you're at in your swing, right? So if there's more tension on the line because of your arc, it's harder to pull the trigger to sort of replicate, I guess, the difficulty of like holding on to the web. The first few times that happened, it was like, it was neat. I mean, it's really neat. But I'm somebody who, as a ancient 40-year-old man, am starting to have some like joint pain, like repeated stress pain, and some of this from woodworking and stuff. But like, I got pretty bad carpal tunnel syndrome and a little piquant of arthritis is kicking in there. And I found it like painful. Like, after I did it for a while, like pain in these joints.
Yeah.
And it's something where like it does. Like a lot of things like this, it blends away after you've done it a little bit. And I don't think, like, I think the novelty of it wears off. For games where it, like, was used a little more sparingly, I think it would be interesting. But where it's, like, automatic, constant, I think that it's going to wear a little thin.
A quick anecdote about using it sparingly, though. I'm going to talk a little bit about Demon's Souls. Demon's Souls doesn't really use it. Demon's Souls doesn't really use the feedback triggers, except for when you're shooting a bow, which sucks. Because like, if you're in a very, very tense situation, which in Demon's Souls or any Souls game is like constantly, and you're like, I need to shoot off a bunch of arrows into this big monster before it reaches me, and then you start pulling it back, and there's like a halfway point where once you pull it past that halfway point, then you've like cocked your bow ready to fire it, and you forget, like, oh, that's right, oh shit. It makes it really hard to get into the rhythm of just like launching off arrows in the way that you want. And it's bizarre to me to have that experience of just like forgetting that that's a thing that this controller does if that's the only thing the game uses it for.
So I agree with everything that was just said. I think the important thing about the controller is sparing you, specifically with the triggers, is sparingly. Like, if you're using it for something that you're doing constantly, I think it is generally annoying. Spider-Man is like the best example. I agree with you, Justin. Like, that was not fun. I don't play with an arrow class that much, so Griffin, the Dark Souls, Demon Souls thing didn't really affect me. But I think there are a lot of points in Astro where it's just used a little bit occasionally, and in those scenarios, I think it's cool and fun. Like, I liked using it with the bow and arrow that you find in Astro's playroom.
Yeah.
But I agree, like, it could get a little old. I think the haptics, though, are probably the most game-changing aspect of that. And I've been playing a lot of games on Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, the same games. And the games that use those haptics in smart ways, like, really do elevate the game on PlayStation 5 in ways that I would actually consider deciding which platform to play on based on whether they're supporting them or not.
Can we talk about some system level stuff?
Sure.
Because I have spent a lot of time playing PS5, again, mostly just, you know, playing through Demon's Souls because I like that series a lot. And I'm still kind of like finding things that are built into like the main UI that like I did not like sit the thing down and explore all of its many, many doodads and features. But like I was playing some Astros and I was like, all right, I'm gonna play some Demon's Souls. And that was the first time I used the game switcher. Mm. And it's just a little thing. You press the PlayStation button once and you get this little basically crossbar thing that has like, you know, your friends list and settings and power options and all that shit. But there's also a game switcher and you click that and it shows you like recent games and favorited games and you just click that. And y'all, it's not a joke. This thing loads fast as hell. Oh my God, it loads so fast. Like it switches between Astro and Demon's Souls in a few seconds and you're just like on the main menu of Demon's Souls. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
When I talk about evolution versus revolution, like that is the just experience of using it is really, I mean, it that feels next gen to me. And I mean, it's like it's quality of life stuff. Like I'll tell you the one that got me that I really noticed was loading up the store, which used mm-hmm. to be like, and it's not a long wait, right? Like it's all it's not like exponentially different, but when I went to load in the store, I just kind of assumed that it was when it would take a while on the PS4, it was just like, well, it's the network. It's like talking to the network and then it's loading it from the network. And that's why you're just there. Like you hit the store and then the store's open and you can look through the store and it feels like you're just navigating the same system. Well, it's not the like taking forever to process. And at least from my experience, the connectivity, like the download speeds are.
Yeah, it does seem a lot faster. I don't know why that is. I don't, it's not like it needs a processor.
Well, that's the thing with the store. Why would it be that way? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, but it's just, it was,
are you using
everything
Wi-Fi?
Feels snappier.
Or are you using a direct connection?
I'm over Wi-Fi.
I'm direct connection, but I was also that on PS4. So that's not, yeah. That is not different either.
Yeah. That is the stuff to me that feels like, holy shit, like that really, it felt like a very big change.
It's hard to like put a specific face on it, even though I tried earlier, of just like everything makes sense. I feel like it is so usable. It feels like an extension of everything is where you think it should be. Like the store was not this like really, really painful thing to explore to find Demon's Souls and Spider-Man and the games that I wanted to download and then getting them downloaded super, super quick. I don't know. I found it all so, so easy to use.
I want to get more into that, but how about we do that after a break?
Okay. Sure. Yes. Fine. Yes. If you're tired, I don't get tired. I love games.
So, Griffin was talking about the idea of everything being where it just should be, and then it's really easy to use the PlayStation 5. I agree with that from a UI perspective. I think like the way they broke it up when you turn on the system is there's games and media, and you're in the games mode and you can find everything there. And then you switch over to media and then all your apps are there. I was thinking about the comparison between PS5 and Xbox because I really enjoy the Xbox's navigation system. And I think the comparison is PS5 is to Apple what Xbox is to Windows. So by that, like PS5, it just works. If you are not going to modify anything, if you're not going to customize anything, you're going to know where your games are. You're going to know where your media apps are. But that's about it. With Xbox, with all the pin systems and being able to create your own collections and like effectively completely redesign the UI around however you like to use it, it is way better. But with one huge caveat, most people I don't even think know that you can customize it. So like,
I didn't until this exact moment.
Yeah, what good are those features if you don't know they exist? I like where I'm at with my Xbox now, but it took me years before I realized, like, oh, hey, I can make this usable? Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because otherwise you're just drowning in squares, essentially, on Xbox.
Exactly.
Speaking of squares, I did want to talk about one aspect of the PlayStation UI. I am not a huge fan of the PlayStation 5 UI, I'll be honest. Like, I think it was next to perfect on PlayStation 4 for the most part. It wasn't 100%, but 95% of the way there. And I think they made a lot of changes, Apple-esque changes, I agree with you, Plant, that simplify the visuals. It makes it like a much cleaner looking experience, but make it more complicated. An example being, the PlayStation 4, at some point in its life cycle, added this sidebar where you could do all the sorts of like microphone adjustments and add people to parties and all sorts of stuff. Now, they have that on PlayStation 5. It's the crossbar that Griffin mentioned earlier. It appears on the bottom. But in this case, just like as a simple, it's just icons. So you kind of have to remember what the icons even mean. Some of the icons only show up if they're in active use. So, for example, if you wanted to see your downloads list, there needs to be something downloading for you to actually see your downloads list, which is kind of a weird thing because it, like, if you're not sure if something's downloading or not and you're not seeing the icon, you're still kind of left in the dark. So
settings also isn't on that bar. Settings is kind of buried. Which I desperately wanted to be on that bar. Yeah, it feels really weird that it's not on that bar.
I think they will make a lot of changes to on those aspects, on the clarity aspects over time. The one thing that I don't think they're going to change, I think it's going to be with us for a while, that I really don't care for. When you pull up the crossbar, you just hit the PlayStation button once, and the little crossbar is on the bottom, but most of the screen is taken up by these giant squares that are like activity square. I don't even remember what they're called.
Yes, activities.
Activity boxes, whatever. And these are like, here's a trophy you earned. Here's a trophy you could earn. Here's a screenshot you took recently. None of this stuff is stuff that I want to see, let alone take up the vast majority of my screen. I really don't care.
Yes.
But at the same time, though, I think there absolutely will be cases where the activities are a defining radical thing for not the system level stuff, but for certain games. Like if you set a the Astrobot game has like a bunch of sort of like speed runny challenges or little high score challenges, and if somebody on your friends list like surpasses your time or whatever and it shows up in that activity bar, like you can go directly back to that shit. I'm not saying that that matters for fucking Astrobot, but I am saying for like, I was thinking specifically about like Geometry Wars when we were like, I remember being like super competitive with my friends about Geometry Wars, specifically 2 and 3. So like having a game where I actually give a shit about that kind of stuff and having it like appear in my activity bar or showing me like, hey, some people are raiding in Destiny. Like that's, the promise of that is really, really cool. I agree it's annoying when it sort of obstructs the, for example, big, big demon that's fucking running at me while I play Demon's Souls, but I think it's a neat idea and concept.
Yeah, that literally happened to Mike McWhorter, where he was like finishing up his Demon's Souls review on one of the final bosses, and then like right in the, like at the most crucial point, ping! Somebody just beat your time in Astro's playroom. It's like, no. Yeah. No, thank you. Please stop.
Yeah, and I think the most likely scenario is that you played a challenge once and then completely forgot about it and do not give a fuck that people are beating your challenge scores.
Yeah.
So Griffin's scenario, I think, is a rare scenario. And generally speaking, you should probably just turn off the notifications, which I did. Yeah. I like dug into the menus and found it and just turned almost all of them off. I actually turned like trophy notifications, friend, like all that stuff off just so I could like be in it. And it's nice that you can do all that stuff. It's just really buried in the settings.
Another little thing that I like that is good for people who are not going to take the time to customize it. PS4 had those adaptive skins or whatever they were called, custom themes for, that you could download to make your thing look cool. For PS5, instead, when you scroll over a game, it takes over the entire screen and it starts playing music from the game. Kind of similar to like a Netflix autoplay.
Yeah.
I dig it. I like that, like, it feels like I'm like shifting between moods as I switch between games. I am curious, will I get tired of this in 2 weeks?
I turned it off.
I turned it off on Netflix. We'll see.
I turned it off on PlayStation 5 already. It was fine, but yeah.
We have not talked about sort of, and I imagine we haven't talked about it because it'll be a incredibly short discussion, but the games look real good.
Yeah.
They look real, real good. And maybe that's not such a like astute observation because they look real, real good on the Xbox as well. Not that this is meant to be like we're helping you decide between these two boxes, but I have a really, really great PC. So like I did not think the generational leap would matter as much to me from a like graphical perspective, but then I'll be playing Demon's Souls and or even Astrobot is not the most sort of I don't know, it's not the most obvious game to be like a graphical sort of like sales pitch, but the amount of stuff happening on the screen is like kind of incredible. I found myself like really, really impressed with how fucking Astrobot looked.
I'm dumb about I had to write an article about teraflops and it took me like 8 hours to figure out what a teraflop is. I'm not a smart man, right? So this is, but take this for what it's worth. But for me as a lapsed game critic, I think it's probably useful. It occurred to me while I was playing Spider-Man. It's probably useful for us to stop thinking in terms of better graphics and start thinking in terms of more graphics. And I know that sounds insane, but when I was playing Spider-Man, it like looked really good. The PS4 though looked really good, but there was like a plan for almost everything I would do. Everything I could do is like tied together. You know what I mean? Or like in a, there was a conflict late in the game where I was fighting like literally 100 different people on 8-10 different rooftops, yeah, that was all happening simultaneously, that I was like flowing between this gigantic battlefield basically. And it's, again, it looked great, but not in a way where you're like, I mean, we all have those memories as kids, I think, as the first time you played the next generation of consoles, where you're like, holy shit, this is my life has changed. This is not that, but it does, you can feel it in that. You don't feel it in still images, I think, yeah, or even like in videos, but in the playing of it, I think you feel how much more expansive the games can be. And most of the things we're talking about, save for Astro and Demon's Souls, and Astro is kind of a weird subcase, we're designed to work on both. Yeah. So like, we're not even really seeing, I think, the full power of the box.
I definitely think that's true. I actually think, having spent a lot more time with both consoles now, this generation is maybe a bigger shift than we're giving it credit for. Because I go back and I think about, you know, like how Perfect Dark Zero looked, right? Or I think about how Assassin's Creed Black Flag looked compared to, you know, it was launched on both systems. And Valhalla looks fantastic on Series X and PS5. Like, I think there is definitely more of a leap in terms of quality for Valhalla than there was for Black Flag.
I actually don't agree with that. I think Valhalla looks very good, but it also looks like a game that absolutely could have run and does on PS4 and Xbox One at 30 frames a second. I think the only real difference here, and it's a big difference, don't get me wrong, is that it runs at 60 frames per second on next gen.
That's the bigger thing, by far.
And that's a big deal. Like, I really do care about like running games at 60 frames a second. It makes a big difference. But I think visually speaking, just a screenshot does not look like a, quote, next-gen game. The only game that I have played that is like, visually, this is a next-gen experience, is Demon's Souls.
Right.
Nothing else has come close to the lighting, the environments, the, like, quote, next-gen-ness that Demon's Souls does.
But I think that the reason that maybe it doesn't feel like the biggest leap is because it is cushioned by the fact that most of us have pretty good game. I know Justin does, like, yeah, pretty good gaming PCs. Where I remember the first time I played Destiny 2, which is maybe the game I've not played more of a video game in my life than Destiny 2, and I played almost all of it on PlayStation 4, where it runs at 30 frames per second. At, you know, whatever visual quality the PS4 can pump out. And then I played it on my PC at 60 frames per second, and it is an indescribable,
yeah,
like, leap. Like, it is a completely different game. Same for Sekiro. I fucking adore Sekiro, that I played, I'm pretty sure, at 30 frames per second on PS4, and then I bought it again on PC because I wanted to play it at 60 frames per second, and it is... that is the next-gen leap. Like, for me, I know there's people who don't give a shit about that, but for me, like, that is the thing where it's like, this is a whole new thing. People who don't have that PC, who play a Destiny 2 on PS4 and then play it 60 frames per second 4K on PS5, like, that is a fucking gigantic leap. That is like, yeah, Nintendo 64, yeah, to GameCube quality leap.
If you have an original Xbox One or PS4,
yeah,
the game looks, Valhalla looks nothing. It is not a matter of frame rate. It looks nothing like that game. I mean, maybe if you have a Series X or a Pro, you're getting close and you're getting checkerboard resolutions. But how that game looks on, I don't know. Did you all see the comparison of Cyberpunk on Series X versus Xbox One X?
No. I didn't watch it, no.
It's it is on YouTube. I'll make sure that I link it when we tweet out the show. It's a real interesting thing, especially when you consider they still haven't shown that game on original hardware. I think it's going to look like a Switch port. Like, I don't know how they're going to make that thing run. Anyway, do we want to get into questions? We're going to be talking about both these consoles a lot more over the next few weeks as we actually talk about the games.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sure.
Wait.
Yep.
Can I complain about something?
Sure, yeah, please.
My
always.
Front, this is not an opinion, fact.
Fact.
My front charging port, and apparently this is not an uncommon thing, the front USB port on my PS5 does not charge my controller.
Huh.
There is two or three times I left it plugged in and came back overnight or whatever, or a few hours later, not in rest mode or anything like that, just came back and it was not charging.
Is it supposed to be charging? From there?
Yeah.
I was curious if it's supposed to be charging from there. The reason I ask is because the ports in the back of the console are different USB ports. I mean, they're the same shape.
I moved, and apparently that remedies the problem. So I'm hoping it will. I just tried that this morning. So I switched to back over. And I've always used the front port on all of the previous ones.
It's weird.
I mean, whether or not it's working as intended, it sucks.
Yeah, no.
So it's like either it's a bug or a feature. Yeah. It blows regardless.
So that's it. Xbox wins. That's it, folks. We were waiting.
Well, Xbox doesn't actually have a port on the front of it to plug in USB, so.
Damn, back. PS5 wins.
Yeah, it does. Doesn't it?
No, there's no port on the front of the Xbox. It's just
now Russ black wins. Square.
You're going to pull up a picture of an Xbox.
I'm just so curious. Okay, let's get into questions. This one is from Sarah. For those who don't have as much money, do you think any game bundles could make getting a PS5 worth it if you have the PS4?
No.
No, definitely not.
Of current
It's a good question for what it's worth. Like, I think it's valuable. Question. But I think that like if you are seriously considering like saving money at this point, there is zero reason to buy either of these consoles. The games
Correct.
Are very good, as we've discussed, but also there are not that many of them, and they're not that much better. Just wait.
This is what I would say for all console launches, is if you can wait a year and a half to 2 years, do it. Because what will happen is over that course of time, they'll release one or two pretty great games, and then there will come a holiday bundle where they'll give you like three games plus $100 off the console, and you really get your money's worth. If you can't wait, go for it. Like, you know, spend your money how you want. But especially with this generation where most games are still going to run on your old console, I would wait.
Yeah.
Can we gut check? We didn't talk about this. Did everybody get the disk drive-less version or the disk drive-full version?
Mine has a disk drive.
Mine did too. But at the same time, like, I don't
foresee I'll ever use it. Well, no. You know what? I might use it for
like Blu-rays.
Watching the occasional Blu-rays.
I guess that's fair. But that's $100 cheaper for the version without the disc drive. So that's a good option.
You can get a decent Blu-ray player for $100.
Yeah, just something
you
to
get
keep
a really
in
good one for $100 probably.
I have heard, and I haven't experienced this personally because I haven't put a lot of discs in there. But I have heard that like the one thing that gets very very loud is that disc drive when you're installing stuff or it's pulling data off of a disc. It will get like Jet Engine loud. Not when you're playing necessarily, but that's something to keep in mind.
This is a question from Mike. I play on a PC with a NVIDIA 1080 card, and I haven't bought a new Sony Microsoft console since 2006. Is now the time to jump back in?
Take it away, Russ. This is awesome because, as I've discussed on the show, that is the video card I have. So I'm the exact use case for this. My recommendation, if you can get one, this is a great option to get a next-gen gaming console and basically buy yourself a few years. I think I talked about this last week too. But the 1080 right now is really having a tough time dealing with games that are like open-world 3D games like Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed. And if you want to play those games, buying a console for $500 is going to basically buy you 2 years, 3 years, maybe even 4 years of playing those sorts of games pretty well. And then at that point, you could probably upgrade your PC.
If I was Mike, I would buy a PS5 And then I would use my PC for like whatever your Microsoft needs are.
And you could play like indie stuff on your PC as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I think if you were able to actually have a choice, which is like not really a starter, I would go PS5 on that. This question is from Pete. What future title on the PS5 are you looking forward to based on how you envision them using the tech and the controller?
This is a great question, actually. This is a game that I did not really care about until I actually went hands-on and played games like Astro and Demon's Souls, etc. I am now super, super excited for Ratchet & Clank in ways that I was not previously.
Yeah.
I hope they do as much justice to the controller as Astro's Playroom does. And if they do, I think it's going to be an amazing experience. I like the Ratchet & Clank games. I've played a bunch of them, but they did kind of lose steam for me after a while. I think with the interesting controller stuff and the crazy load times and stuff like that, I think this game's going to be really special. So I'm very pumped.
I stand Tango Gameworks, and I cannot wait for Ghostwire Tokyo. I think that game, I don't know if that game is going to be good, and I don't know if that game's going to be bad, but I do know it's going to be fucking buck wild, and I absolutely can't wait to play that game.
Justin, how about you?
Probably... Well, I think God of War 2 is going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Although I think before that, earlier than that, I think hopefully the next Horizon game, I think we'll use this in a lot of cool ways. And of course, whenever Kojima decides to roll up on, I wish I could have been with him the first time he learned about haptic triggers.
Oh yeah.
Like, I imagine him just like dragging his entire desktop into the trash and like, start again. Start again. I can make the triggers hurt.
They're
going
to fucking re-release Death Stranding with amazing trigger.
Oh, yeah. And you,
they have to re-release that game on PS5 for like, do some update.
Also, you know for a 100% fact that Quantic Dream is like, yes, please. I cannot wait. I can make the triggers hurt. Let me do it. Daddy, please.
My real answer.
Let me make the triggers hurt, Dad.
My answer is Resident Evil 7. Just because I
seven
think,
or eight?
Yeah, I love
eight.
Seven, man.
Which one?
Great.
What's the village?
The new one's 8.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's the one that I'm super curious what they do with it. I feel like there will be... it's the closest we'll get to a Kojima type of goofiness, I expect, with the controller anytime soon. My fake answer is Gravity Rush 3, which I do not think
doesn't
will ever get
yet.
Made.
Yeah.
But I think could do all sorts of great things with it. But hey, who knows? Gravity Rush 2, didn't think that would happen. And Gravity Rush makes a cameo in Astro's Playroom. Mm-hmm. So it's not fully dead. Which is...
I didn't know we were allowed to pick fake games. Can I do Blasto 2?
Is Deathloop? Deathloop is coming out on... Oh, no, it's a timed exclusive on PS5, too. Yeah. That game looks rad as hell as well.
That does look very cool.
What do we have next week, Justin?
Siphon Filter. Yeah, I was surprised, too. But apparently we can pick fake games.
Has anybody... Well, before we end it, anybody been playing anything else? Or has everybody just been all PS5 all the time?
Yeah.
I got something.
I want to talk a little bit about Call of Duty, actually.
Plant played it, too.
I have not finished the campaign in Call of Duty. If you've been paying attention, this is Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. Certainly, I am very concerned about how this is all going to play out, politically speaking.
You think?
I don't know. I like hold out hope for there to be some crazy twist where Reagan rips off his head and he's a robot. That'd be great. But as a game, I think it does a few things like really interesting. For one thing, as a Call of Duty game, it does like weird side missions, which haven't been very common in Call of Duty games, where you have to like use stealth and collect like clues to solve like weird passkey codes and stuff like that. There's like an interesting metagame that hasn't really happened in a Call of Duty game. But the thing I want to talk about are, surprise, surprise, the PlayStation 5 features with the controller. This is the only third-party game that I've played that uses the controller in like really, really wild ways. It does the trigger stuff. The trigger stuff, for one thing, is very weird because it, based on how heavy the gun is that you're picking up, it's harder to aim the gun. So if you're holding like a heavy machine gun, I could like barely squeeze the trigger all the way down. It was so fucking heavy.
Sounds fun.
But it also does environmental haptics as well. So for example, when I'm in a helicopter, I can feel the chopper blades of the helicopter in my controller, which feels really cool and helps for immersion and all that stuff. So I think I was just really impressed that they took the time to add all those features that are very much specific to PlayStation 5 and make it like a unique experience.
I've been playing Destiny 2 Beyond Light. I mentioned it last week, and now I've had a bit more time to like finish the campaign part that was in the expansion. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been following the game or you haven't played it in a while, they have shifted out of the way that they used to do expansions for the game. Like Forsaken was the really, really big one that added a bunch of story stuff and subclasses and like three new big zones and all kinds of stuff. They don't do that anymore. Now they have a seasonal system where Beyond Light drops and you get like, you know, 20% of what is actually going to be in the expansion. And every week they mete out like a little bit more of what is new about the game. And that's cool. Like this week, I haven't played it since the new stuff dropped yesterday, but like they added a whole new character and a new bounty system and a new quest line. And so it makes sense from the perspective of like, there's always stuff for you to come back to. Mm-hmm. But the launch itself is kind of a calamity a bit, because while there is really big, cool stuff they've added, like a new element, there's this stasis element that has new subclasses for all the different types of guardians that you can play. And it feels cool. It's like ice powers. You can freeze people and do all kinds of cool shit like that. The big story of what they did with this expansion is sunsetting, where they took a lot of guns, like a lot of weapons, and basically made it so you can no longer upgrade them mm-hmm. to like keep up with what is the current power cap. So it basically renders, I don't know the exact number of guns, but a huge portion of guns, popular guns, staple guns, completely obsolete.
Yeah.
And
another cool new feature from Destiny 2.
Right. And that itself
delivering the fun
is kind of a,
it's only Bungie can.
It's a recognition of just like, there is no way for us to incentivize you to keep like playing with new shit. So we're just going to like make the old shit not necessarily usable in, you know.
It's also wild to think of how much they have to keep balanced. I mean, as systems continue to evolve, like
I'm willing to forgive a lot of that, because it is, I genuinely believe, the hardest video game to make currently in the world. But that in and of itself kind of sucks, right? Like, I spent so much time grinding for the Mountaintop, which is this great grenade launcher that you had to play a billion matches of PvP for. I did that, and now it's like, I think that's one of the game guns that got sunset. They also made it so, like, a lot of those guns that you did have to grind for, you can now go to this one terminal in the, like, main tower and spend a little bit of, like, of in-game currency and just, like, get it for free. So it's like, what the fuck am I playing this game for if that's what you're going to do? But the bigger problem is that they added virtually nothing loot-wise to the game. So they sunset all this loot. Like, go play with new stuff, but there's no real new stuff. Like, the world drop pool is, I've got nothing. Like, no guns have dropped for me in the game that, like, are meaningful at all. All of the vendors in the game that you can, like, buy stuff from, they didn't refresh those at all.
Oh, that's
so
weird.
they removed, like, all this shit, and they didn't replace it with anything. So
yeah,
it's like the story is cool. The new, they did some UI changes. That's cool. The stasis stuff is cool. But then they fucking removed, you know, a lot of guns that I used constantly. And I'm like, okay, I'll play with the new stuff. What's the new stuff? And they're like, here's like four new things that aren't very good. And it's like, what the fuck are we doing? And maybe that will be fixed by the, again, rollout
cycle.
Right, the new raid isn't out yet. There will be a new batch of raid weapons, I'm assuming. There will be new exotics that they add here and there. But holy shit, talk about like a terrible first impression. Like, I love Destiny 2. I played this new expansion for like 2 or 3 days and have not come back to it since, because I finished the thing and I was like, well, what do I do? Like, there's, I guess I could grind out some Nightfalls or whatever, but like, for what? Because nothing's going to drop that I give a shit about. It is such a bad decision. It just feels like I don't know why they made it the way that they did. But yeah, who knows? Maybe by the time the next season drops, there'll be like enough chunky stuff. That's what I'm counting on. But right now, I do not think it is worth coming back to.
Justin, how about you?
Very briefly, I will mention that Grifflands has added a third character that I dipped back in for. Smith is a brawler, kind of with a fist-based combat. The combat in Smith's unique combat mechanic is really cool, because he can drink to give himself special abilities. He drinks beer to give himself special abilities. And, space beer, you know.
Sure.
But he drinks to give himself special abilities. And then after you drink, an empty bottle card is put into your deck. So the more of those you have, the more stuff you can do with them. Like, there's guns that shoot empty bottles. There's, like, you can throw empty bottles. It becomes, like, part of your inventory, I guess, after you drink stuff.
How are those load times?
And he's got... Oh, well, it's on PC, bud, so they are just speedy as all get out. It's SSD powered.
Got their cards loading up.
I'm
Fresh mentioned that I played the new Call of Duty. I'll make this very quick. It is problematic, to say the least. So I'm hesitant to say the very good thing about the game, because it might
Corporal Snowflake
too many people to play it. Hey, if Activision's ever going to, I think, do they still have the James Bond license? Let's pretend they do. If they do, and they want to make a spiritual sequel to GoldenEye, this amalgamation of developers is the one to do it. Because there are some levels in this game that are just modern GoldenEye. They just went and said, like, hey, what if we just did that? And then, like, sure, I don't know. We have to ship something. It is hilarious and very fun when it finally gets into that zone. All the sneaky spy stuff that Fresh talks about, is it impressive? Yes. Is it why I play Call of Duty? No. Do I want to just walk around a hallway, shoot people with my PP7, Silence PP7, and my fancy Magnum? Yeah, I do.
You can do that in those stealth missions. That you don't insta fail if you get spotted.
Well, That's true. You do get a. I do like in the game the way you mark people is you pull out your cute little camera and you take photos
like
of them.
70s camera.
Real quick,
just out of curiosity, I'm gonna go around. Don't think about it. What year was the last James Bond video game released? Go.
2004.
Russ?
I'm going to say, it was probably the GoldenEye remake. I want to say that was 2008.
2012.
Plant gets it on the nose. Yeah. 007 Legends.
Oh, wow.
PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. Well, it was a bunch of different James Bonds
EA, right?
Doing different things.
I don't remember that at all.
You could play
it was a Call of Duty style. Bad game.
Okay.
No major outlet gave it above a 5.
Should I lay that on Sean Connery's grave?
Out of 10.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure he'd. Yeah.
All right.
This is your tombstone now, dog.
That's rough.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Be sure to tell a friend about it, besties.fan. The year is heating up, and the game of the year debates are just over the horizon. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure you all are too. Mail@besties.fan is our email address. @TheBestiesPodcast is where you can follow us on Twitter. There's also a link there to sign up for our mailing list. We have a shirt at McElroyMerch.com. Anything I'm forgetting?
Next week is Demon Souls.
Yes.
Next week is Demon Souls. Catch it.
If you don't have a PS5, just play it on PS3 because it's pretty similar in a lot of ways.
Basically the same game, but not as pretty.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll be sure to join us again next time for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Fox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!